listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. Exciting show today. We're going to talk about driving the Lotus Evora GT and the Aston Martin DBS Superleggero that I think is definitely one of the prettiest cars on the road today. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Geico. Do you own your home or rent your home? Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, with Bill Goldberg. Coming in from Texas. We're going to have a fun show today. We've got some interesting stuff in the news. In a light news area, like car news. It always seems to be light because nothing's going on. But there's some interesting stuff. And I had a good conversation with our friends at the Peterson Museum recently that I want to tell you about. Before we get started, we'll remind you about Dodge Power Dollars. For every horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle purchase, you'll get $10 off. So peeling out in a Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack, hey, no problem. You get $4,580 bucks off. So reach out to your Dodge dealer. They still got to sell some cars. Come on now. As he sits in the garage, it's over with all the cars behind you.
I'm just trying to provide a good setting for our viewers.
It's good. I saw your picture up on social media the other day of you got a couple of your cars just lined up in storage. I know when you made the move out there, everything's sort of scattered around different storage units and stuff as you get situated there and get the barn set up for one and all the animals and get the new garage built and all that stuff. So it is nice that you have a few toys there at home.
Thank God. This is the only room I have for any of them. So I shoved two of them in here for sure. But yeah, I had to go get the Daytona yesterday. At least show it with the sunlight was like. That's the first time the car's actually been out there in the day. So, everybody's getting antsy. The country's opening up, you know, on different levels, and it gives me an opportunity to go get my baby some air.
Yeah, you know, everybody's really starting to feel that quarantine fatigue, and people definitely want to go out. We still get over here. We're still getting some press cars. They're doing a very good job of delivering the cars. The guys are masked and gloves and they're wiping them all down and everything's a key fob now. So the key fob is sanitized and it's in just like a Ziploc bag and they hand you the Ziploc bag. Obviously they can drive around with it with like that in the Ziploc bag. And you know, some of the companies aren't doing it. Some of the companies are, I think it was Ed Lowe from Motor Trend that tweeted out a little while ago saying that they photographed more cars like in the last 30 days than they have in any other like single month. It's been in isolation. One guy just takes the car out and he has to photograph it and as much as he can without all the lights and the crew and all that stuff. But they're just trying to get as much content as we can. And last week I thought our shows were good. The chat with Russell Carr from Lotus was fun to have him come in from, to video chat with us from the UK. And then Adam and I spoke to Jim Farley, the COO of Ford. Mm-hmm. And what I like about Jim is he's a real car guy that is running a car company. Afterward, we were exchanging just a couple personal emails and we won't get into all of it, but we were just sharing stories and some photos and, you know, he's got a GT40 that he vintage races in Europe. And out here, he's got a Cobra. He's got a vintage like big block Cobra. Oh, I think it's big block. I think it might be a 289 Cobra that he races out here. And he's just got some good cars. You know, he's really into it. And I was like, oh, you know, just let you know, we've got a couple documentaries up on Netflix, the Willie T. Ribs and Shelby's. Like, I've seen every one of them three times. And I was like, all right.
A car guy with a lot of time on his hands.
Yeah.
And every documentary.
And he was home as well. He was like, yeah, I'm home, I'm quarantined, my hair's getting long, and what are you going to do? But anyway, so I talked with the friends at the Peterson Museum about what do they do? When do they open the museum, and how do they start doing events? Because we were going to do our CarCast Live event there. And they said that they will be opening the museum fairly soon. There's all new rules they're trying to put into place, and cleaning and all this stuff. And they limit the amount of people that are in there. The museum is big enough that just walking around the museum with your family and seeing the cars, I don't think that's big of a deal. You don't have to really get close to anybody. If you think about a lot of the museums, unless they're taking a group and moving them from room to room with somebody making a speech and everyone's jammed together, this isn't really that. So I think they will be able to do that. As far as live events, their car shows and gatherings, they've had a lot of luck doing them virtually. They put the call out to anybody around the world. By the way, people who couldn't normally make it to the museum, send in videos, send in like 30-second videos of your car, and they're doing like a cars and coffee gathering, and they're using Zoom, and they're using YouTube, and they're streaming it all live, and it's turning out well to the point where I don't think they're going to stop doing that. Even if they have live events there and gatherings, those gatherings will be a little bit smaller, but then there will be a virtual aspect of it.
So, well, yeah, I mean, think about it from a business model. I mean, you want to get to as many people as humanly possible, and not everybody's fortunate or unfortunate enough to live in LA.
That's exactly right. So we struggled with this with our CarCast Live event is we want to do the event. Last year it was fun, and we've got a good amount of people there for our first time out, and the live podcasts were good. This year we may just do it virtual, but we will all participate. You will, I will, Adam will, people from all around the world can submit videos of their cars. And again, we'll probably do this in July, and then we'll vote on different cars, your pick, my pick, Adam's pick, I don't know, best in show or people's choice or something. I still have a stack of hats and swag and gift cards from our friends at Jegs. Jegs is going to be giving out, they don't even know this yet, but Jegs is going to be giving out $250 gift cards to four category winners, because I've got those sitting here from the last car event, and they said, no problem, hold on to it, do it for next time. And I was like, great, thanks, guys. You guys are awesome. So we may do a virtual CarCast Live event, and we'll do some podcasting as well, and we'll do it all in video and audio, and hopefully everybody will participate. So I think we're aiming for like July event. Also, as like you said, as the country starts to open up a little bit, it gives everybody a little bit of a opportunity to go outside and stretch and soak up some sunshine and maybe shoot a little video with their car, which we would love to see. I know that the Peterson said their first cars and coffee event, they got cars from Dubai, from China, all around the U.S., all around the world. They're just getting car submissions. And I'd love to see that too, because I know we've got fans listening all around the world. There's people that reach out to me on social media, I know as you as well, saying, we don't get this type of car there. And then, of course, some of the cars they get, we don't get. We'd love to see that as well. So anyway, it's kind of a neat idea. Oh, so what they told me was, we're all super bummed, like Adam especially, Monterey Car Week is canceled. Now, the vintage racing, they're still on the fence. That can be its own standalone event, like a lot of vintage races. But Pebble Beach Concourse is canceled. The Quail event's canceled. The Lemons event that they do up there, Concorso Italiano, like all the car show gatherings, everything's canceled. The auctions are canceled. So the Peterson wants to do all of the car events online. They are going to reach out to all the people submitted for Pebble Beach and let them show their cars. And they're going to do a virtual Monterey Car Week. And it's going to be the same dates as Car Week in August, and give everybody else to see the cars and submit cars. But I know there's a lot of like video coverage and some TV coverage of Monterey Car Week, although that's kind of slim. The Peterson, having them sort of quarterback this effort is kind of nice, but because it does give people a single destination to go, right? To watch videos, basically you watch them for free and go, yeah, I can check out Motor Trend's coverage if they are doing it, which they normally did a TV thing. I don't know if they are now. It doesn't make sense unless they do, you know, like a previous version. So it'd be kind of interesting to see the Peterson Museum do this, but so far they've got a lot of submissions, a lot of fans watching what they've done, you know, just their cars and coffee events.
Yeah, with the quality of all of their vehicles, any new content of any kind right now in the automotive space is to be clamored after, for sure.
Yeah, you and I were talking a minute ago.
I watched that Joe Exotic crap the other day.
Yeah, you know they're making a scripted series with Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, he's perfect for it.
He really is, though. He's so nutty, but I always think he does a good job. I could sit down to any good or terrible Nick Cage movie and just watch it.
Yeah, because he's such an interesting individual.
He is, and he's a bit of a car guy as well. There's a couple of cars that he's owned in the past that I believe were part, maybe still are part of the Peterson Museum. I think they have like this purple hot rod that he owned from back in the day, which is funny because I remember moving out here 20-something years ago, and Symbolic Motor Cars had a little showroom like on Wilshire and – I forgot the cross. I don't know if it was like a Sentinella, something Wilshire and something. And I believe that car was in the showroom at the time. And I just stopped to look at it. I'm like, this is crazy. Why do you have a purple hot rod in there? And they're like, oh, it's Nicolas Cage's car. I was like, oh, all right. I like that. Speaking of nutty car collectors that you don't assume are car collectors, one of the things that came up with Jim Farley and talking to him about Ford is not on the air, just privately afterward. He said, by the way, just a side note for fun, somebody with a really good big Ford car collection, Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses. I had no idea he even liked cars. And he's like, yeah, it's an admirable collection. You should try to reach out at some point. I was like, okay, I like that.
You found anything online?
I haven't yet. No, I haven't even dug into it yet. He just sent me an email not long ago. Yeah, but I'm impressed. I'm impressed that that's the one he picked up of a probably 500 top of his mind people that he could pull from. He's like, by the way, fun fact, Axl Rose, huge Ford collector. I was like, all right, I like it.
Surprises me that he's a collector. It doesn't surprise me that he's a Ford collector.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I see that. One of the things you and I were talking about would be, you know, these virtual car shows and stuff that are happening online. As the world starts to open up more, does it change the face of car auctions? Do the car auctions that have had a lot of success actually recently doing online only auctions, will they continue to do them the same way they're doing them now? Or will the emphasis be on bringing people in the door? Are they going to beef up the whole online auction game or not? Because guys like companies like RM and Gooding have already put out statements and said, yes, cars are selling, but we know that is largely has to do with, you know, a lot of no reserve cars being auctioned. So they're going to sell no matter what. We can dig into the app. We can dig into the Hammer Price app and see if they're selling below market, above market, or nothing's changed. We can dig into that a little bit more at another time. But they are saying that they're getting record numbers of registered bidders. And I think that says something for sure. I think this isn't just voyeurism at this point. These are people that are going through the process of registering to bid, to maybe throw down a bid. And I'd like to see the statistic that says, are they also getting record number of bids? I would imagine so. I think people are throwing in as much as, like, we all love Bring a Trailer as well. And this is just sort of a version of that Gooding's doing, that RM is doing.
I'm curious to see their docket. I'm curious to see if they're running the same cars that they'd be running if it was a live auction. I'm also curious to see who the people are, the regulars are, percentage of them that are coming back to this, you know, online form. And then I'm very curious to see the new people that it's bringing in out of whatever it is, whether it be boredom or whether it be, you know, just
curiosity. Yeah.
Just curiosity.
Or, you know, maybe they're thinking there's some deals out there, or they never had an opportunity to go to the actual auctions. And there is something different about being a phone-in bidder versus going there.
Well, it means everything to different people, right?
Yeah.
I could buy a certain class of car over the phone, but there's no way that I would, unless I've seen the car in person or know somebody who's been there and seen the car and who can vouch for it. You know, I mean, I've been there in person a number of times and gotten turned upside down. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done that for sure. And there's the fun event portion of it, especially when you get into something like the Barrett Jackson events. Barrett Jackson Scottsdale is still a big, huge, fun event. For those of us that have gone, even if you pop in for like a day and jump on stage and auction off a car or a charity car, it's a great gathering to catch up with a bunch of friends.
It's a happening, man. You're like-minded people. You know, every single person in that building, in that tent, is going to be a car freak, right? 9 times out of 10, you're going to see 75% of your friends there, at least. You know,
that's exactly it.
And it's work, but it's actually not work. It's fun. It's play, and it's an event. You know, they turned it into something much bigger than an auction.
It's such a social event as well. And it's funny because SEMA and Barrett Jackson Scottsdale are two big events for me, and Monterey Car Week. But SEMA and Barrett Jackson, those are great times to connect with a lot of people from the industry, a lot of the car collectors and TV personalities and other podcasters and stuff. I see a lot of them at Barrett Jackson, and then I get to connect with all of the companies we work with, especially all of our East Coast guys, at SEMA. So those are the two big, like, sort of social events. We work the events as well, but those are the big social events.
And what are the percentage of people that you only see once a year and it's at that event? I mean, there are a lot of people. I could name probably 10, 15 that's the only place that I see them each year.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, and we look forward to it every year. There's always like, hey, SEMA's coming up. We'll see you guys there. What are you doing? Come by the booth, or, you know, there's a gathering Wednesday night or something along the lines of that. But
the only issue is, do you risk the chance of losing the money that's sitting in your pocket or your banking account if you have this affliction, you know, that you got to buy a car, or can you just go and, you know, keep your hands to yourself and not raise it and go, yeah, I'm bidding.
The car thing is interesting, but SEMA hurts me the most. I walk around SEMA and I get all the ideas for the car projects I have, and then over the course of the next year, I'm spending a fortune on these.
Cars. But you could do that in a second at Barrett Jackson.
Yeah, so you could do that at Barrett Jackson.
The 12 months that you accumulate that large bill that you acquired, you know, from all the ideas from SEMA, can be wiped out in 2 seconds by doing this at Barrett Jackson.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a fun event. I'm curious to see where the auctions go. I think they have a lot of opportunity to grow those auctions by doing them online the way they are, and it'll be fun to see how that grows. But I don't think it's going to take away from the events, especially now people are eager to get outside, and it's not going to be.
It's going to add to it. It's going to do nothing but make it bigger and better, I think. And I think, you know, these top echelon auction houses are going to come up with something outside of the box that's going to be really cool, a way to present it.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm interested to see.
Anyway, so we got some what's going on in the news. And the news is, well, first of all, I've been driving a couple of cars, two wildly different cars. I spent a few days in the Lotus Evora GT. We talked a little bit about that already. It was fun. I love driving it. You could never fit in it, Bill, which we knew getting into it. Even as I moved the seat forward to be able to get a good angle with the feet with the clutch, getting in and out of it, because now the dash is so close. It's interesting. But here's the car that's, it's small, it's lightweight, it's 3,100 pounds, 416 horsepower, 3,100 pounds. It scoots around 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, maybe a little less than 4 seconds. I've got no problem with the engine, the 3.5 liter Toyota engine. It's got the Edelbrock supercharger on it. It makes 8.7 pounds of boost to get that kind of power. I think it would be a little more special. Everything about the car I like, except now you're getting into that $100,000 price range, and it's such a competitive price range right now. When you start looking at, you know, sports cars and muscle cars, and Hellcats and Corvette C8 and GT350s and GT500s and Porsche Caymans and forget like some of the super sedans, you know, Alfa Romeo Giulia, M4, you know, and the coupes. Like, it's just a very competitive market. So I started
to
think
very indifferent after this drive.
I've never seen you.
Like,
I think the one thing I wanted to maybe make the car a little more special would be you've got this English design car. It still follows the Lotus mantra of being lightweight and small, and top-notch handling. I think I would have liked to have seen, if you're going to source an engine, and has nothing to do with the reliability and everything of Toyota engine. Honestly, if you would have just said it was a Lexus engine, I think it would have changed the nature of that car, just the outlook of that car, if you would have said Lexus instead of Toyota. But let's say they sourced something English or something German for that car. Maybe like a little twin turbo AMG Mercedes AMG V6 would have been kind of interesting. One of the supercharged V6 engines from Jaguar, right? It's very similar here. 380 horsepower is what they have, before they get into the eights. I think you could have tuned that to 400 horsepower. And you would have sort of this British based engine that could be kind of interesting. Maybe an Audi engine. Audi did work with Spyker back in the day, so Audi did sell their engines. I don't know that BMW does a lot of that, but they did at one point. AMG, as a standalone company under the Mercedes umbrella, they provide the engines for Pagani. They provide the engines for Aston Martin, you know, all the V8 engines and a technology transfer. I just think... You said, hey, Lotus Evora GT, and it's got an Audi V6 twin turbo, or it's got a Jaguar, you know, V6 supercharged, and it's $100,000. I think you'd give it a little bit more attention. Now, that's just me being snobby about a $100,000 car. Everything else about the car is super fun. You know, I thought it was a blast to drive. And
so the power plant's your only issue.
And not the function of the power plant, just the cachet.
Understood.
You know, I just think,
I see your point.
And look, why do you get this car? Why do you get the Lotus Evora GT? Is one is some brand loyalty. Like, we have brand loyalty with everything. At least there's something in our life. Maybe you with Dodge, or maybe somebody with an iPhone, or what brand of toothpaste that we love. There's some brand loyalty. So maybe you pick up a Lotus for that. But also you pick it up because when you do roll up to that Carson Coffee or do that Canyon Cruise or something like that, you're going to be one of one or maybe two guys out there with that car, and there's going to be seven of everything else. And that does make it a little bit special. So, but driving the Lotus Evora GT, like I said, had a lot of fun with it. Swap that out for another British car, wildly different.
And I can tell by the smile on your face.
I think this is one of the prettiest cars on the road. Been driving the Aston Martin DBS Superleggera, wildly different than the Lotus. Instead of lightweight, even though Superleggera basically means lightweight,
it's not.
It's not by any means at all. I liked the DB11 and the Vantage. I drove the Vantage with its V8, its AMG twin turbo V8 engine. I drove the DB11 with a 600 horsepower twin turbo V12, and the DBS steps it up to 715 horsepower, still twin turbo V12. And instead of an aluminum body, it's largely carbon fiber. And that takes about 150, I think they said 159 pounds off the car through, carbon fiber body and the optional titanium exhaust. If you get the carbon fiber roof panel and the exhaust and everything else, it's 159 pounds most. If you don't get those things, I don't know, maybe it's like 100 or so pounds.
What's the curb weight?
4,100-ish. It's the DB11 is over 4,200. It's like 42 and a quarter.
Totally
different car. It's fast. It's interesting because the DB11 is 0-60 in like 3.6 and the DBS is 3.2, but there's something about the DBS that feels faster. Don't get me wrong. It's not going to feel like your Porsche 911 turbo. It doesn't even feel like that Lotus. It's still a heavy car. It's still a GT car. It's meant to be this grand touring car. But some of the GT cars we're starting to see, you know, you think of the Ferrari Superfast, the 812, the TDF, you know, they're starting to really haul ass now. The GT cars are getting really fast. And I love the design of the long nose front engine or front mid, if you will. I've always loved that style of cars. Nothing against a Ferrari 488 or the Pista or even the McLarens and the Lamborghinis, but as cool as they are, they're not as beautiful, I always thought, of this shape of car.
Yeah.
And the Aston Martin DBS picks up a few things. It gives it a little bit more muscular version compared to the DB11. Mm-hmm. And getting into it, though, it doesn't have the sparse supercar-ish interior like the McLaren does and this Lotus. The interior is gorgeous. The leather, the textures, everything is just wrapped. Everything in there is fantastic. They use the infotainment system, the electronics now, they source from AMG. So they get the 8-cylinder engines from AMG and a lot of electronics from AMG. The one thing that bugged me is there's always a caveat, right? There's always a caveat to the rule. And I get in this brand new car. Its base price is $310,000. The one I'm driving is $354,000. Definitely something that catches your eye, right? When you're going in there to write the check, $350,000 for this car. And I get in, I plug in my phone. There's no Apple CarPlay. There's no Android Auto. And I'm like, this doesn't seem like, you know, like, I don't know, like, it's an expensive car. Whether you drive it every day or not drive it every day, you kind of start to think, why? So I reached out to to Aston Martin. I said, before I even talk about it or bring it up, I got to know what's going on here. You know, like, look, we talked to Rolls Royce when we're driving their SUV and there's no CarPlay. And Rolls Royce said they designed their infotainment system to work at the front of the vehicle, of course, but also to the two screens in the back of the seats. And all of their discussions with Apple, there was no way to get CarPlay to work on the front and the back. And they said, until we figure that out, we don't want to do it. And maybe it's sort of them sort of strong arming Apple to work with them a little bit. I don't know, but at least they had a reason. So I was thinking Aston Martin has to have a reason. They didn't just ignore this. And by the way, this wasn't a cost issue. This wasn't like, hey man, let's add another $1,000 to the price so you get CarPlay integration.
Oh yeah.
$50,000. Who gives a shit?
Give me a break. Yeah.
Right. They said that, so much of the electronics and the infotainment system is sourced from AMG, but the deal with them is they are allowed to use it, but they're allowed to use a previous generation software version of what are in the AMG cars. So you'll never cross-shop, let's say, a Vantage or a DB11 with an AMG GT, because if this is a decision maker, they need to cater to the boss, basically, who's Mercedes-Benz. So, okay, I get it. So what he did tell me was the Aston Martin DBX, the SUV that they've debuted that's coming out later in this year, will be the first official model with CarPlay. And then it will end up in the Vantage and the DBS and the DB11. They will all get it in the next model year. They will get it.
There'll be an iPhone 20 by then.
They will, but at least you'll be able to plug it in, and exactly. Then maybe you could start doing some version proofing, for lack of a better term. Once you can get the iPhone to work, a lot of the software upgrades can be done like on your phone and things like that. So anyway, they had a good reason. They sat down with AMG. They're like, hey, we want some technology. We want some engines. And they said, great, but you're kind of going to get the leftovers. Bird. You're going to get the leftovers, which is interesting because I went and I asked for this car because of the supercar that was it Valkyrie? I think it is. The supercar that that we love so much. And looking at that, I wanted to get into this car again. And that discussion led to Aston Martin saying, hey, we are developing our own six-cylinder engine, our own in-house proprietary, I think it was a twin-turbo six-cylinder. And they're going to keep their 12-cylinder, which they do develop. So the two engines will be from Aston Martin, are going to be homegrown. But they're saying that the six-cylinder will always be paired up with some sort of hybrid configuration. Mm-hmm. Two-wheel drive or all-wheel drive or whatever. So the six-cylinder will come with electric motors, and the 12-cylinder will be its you know, motor, all motor vehicle. So I like that they were doing that. And I guess that creates some separation between them and the AMG. When they signed with AMG, I was a fan. It was like, AMG cars are great. The engines are fantastic. Pagani still gets, he pays a premium. He gets them to make like a twin turbo 12 cylinder that they don't even normally make anymore. They just do that for him. And I guess when you're spending, I don't know, $1.5 million on a car, you could put a $180,000 engine in that car and pay a premium and be like, great, now I got, not only are they getting an AMG sourced, they're getting a unique engine built for Pagani. I don't think it was always that way, but it is now. So anyway, that's kind of interesting. The Aston Martin, it's gorgeous. It's fantastic to drive. It has a number of the options, as I said, as you can find in the price, has over $44,000 of options.
Does it feel like it's 4,100 pounds?
It still does. It does feel a little large. The car physically feels big. It does feel a little heavy, but I don't mind it because I just don't drive it the way I was driving like the Lamborghini Huracan. The Spider the other day, right? It's just
You're asking the car to do two totally different things.
Yeah, and for what this car is, I'll tell you, I think the Aston Martin is an easier car to drive every day than the Lamborghini is. And the Lamborghini Huracan is meant to be their sort of daily driver car. And it is. I hopping in and out of that thing all the time. But the Aston Martin is fantastic. Yeah. The Aston Martin is fantastic. And I would say that history has shown that a lot of these English cars, Aston Martins, Bentleys, and whatever, don't really hold their value that much. But if you think of the previous generation DBS, the James Bond car, if you will, the naturally aspirated V12, which sounds fantastic, they're still trading at like $200,000. They actually do hold pretty well. And I think getting the specialty version of it, which is why all these car companies make the unique special versions of it, is to retain some value. I don't know. I think this car potentially could. I guess it's going to depend on how many they end up selling. But the DBS, in my mind, fixes some of the things that the DB11 didn't have. It has more power. It has a little bit more aggressive look. I like the grille design in the front. And it drops a little bit of weight, but also lets you open the hood and see all the raw carbon fiber, and open the trunk and see the carbon fiber in there. They sent over this beautiful green, this dark metallic green color. And the interior is sort of a brown and tan called chestnut, and sort of a two-tone, but the right shades of a brown and tan. I think when it's all tan, it's too light. It just feels too old school. And I don't know. It just feels a little Ferrari 308 to me, but the brown and sort of a cinnamon brown.
I think that car is kind of in a class of its own. I mean, what else can you compare with that car?
Well, I would say
price wise, performance wise, lineage wise.
So I would say they would consider their competition, the Ferrari Superfast. I would say that the Ferrari Superfast, although I think the Ferrari is a little faster. And then you'd have to say Bentley Continental GT.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be the closest thing that you would get to it. I just don't think I like the Bentley, and it's gorgeous, but it's still a little different. Like it's a bigger car. I saw the new Bentley GT. I haven't driven it yet, but when it debuted at the LA Auto Show at their private event, I think 2 years ago, it's badass, and they're putting gobs of power in that thing. But in my mind, I just see one sportier and one just being the ultimate, super cruiser, and that's the Bentley. This car
to me is the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think it is.
Nobody does it like they do. Nobody can teeter that line of GT and straight out sports car and deliver the best package of both than them.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a pretty car. It's been out now, I think, since 2018. I'd be curious to know from some of the people that have this. How do they feel about it 2 years later? What was the cost of ownership? We know it's high for cars like this. All the crazy supercars are, but in a world that we live in where, some of the Ferraris, like the California and probably the Portofino, come with scheduled maintenance and stuff now to be more competitive and more competitive in resale. What is Aston Martin doing in that realm? I haven't dug into it too much, but I'm curious, does this car cost, $3,000 a year, or does it cost $14,000 a year to own? There is a big difference. Actually, I would even bring it up. Like we talked about the Koenigsegg, the crazy four seater with the that you're a big fan of, and at one point you were talking about getting together with a couple of buddies, sort of an investment group, and getting one. What's the cost of ownership on a Koenigsegg Gemera? I don't know if that's come up yet because we're so enamored with how badass that car is, but what does it mean to own that car?
We need to do some investigating. That's for damn sure. Because
yeah.
You're right. That one didn't come up, but it's something to definitely consider. You know, once you look at the maintenance charges with these freaking high-end supercars, $30,000 to change the oil. You know, you got to pull the motor in some of these cars.
Yeah, brake jobs, $30,000. Now you're getting a Bugatti Veyron territory. So you have to kind of think a little bit about the Koenigsegg. You know, I've said this many times on previous shows. I've always felt like if you're getting into that supercar world, you're spending $1 million, $1.5 million, $1.6 million. You think about how often does it go into maintenance? What is the real hard cost for the maintenance of that? What is the dealer and what is, you know, the manufacturer? What are they paying? I say schedule maintenance and everything on that car basically for life should be covered and just charge an extra $150,000, $200,000.
I was just going to say, I cannot wait for a car company to come out and do that.
Just say, hey, Bugatti, it's 1.8 million now, but we cover everything. We cover everything. It does something to us. It does something to the buyer, to the psyche of something. I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world. Between,
it's going to change the playing field when somebody does that.
But just think about how we think, and we can buy something for $15 on an online store and pay $5 shipping, or we can buy it for $20 off of Amazon and get free shipping, and you go, I kind of like the free shipping. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm wasting
like
money on them.
For nothing.
Yeah, you kind of do, even though you're paying a little extra, you know, and you're like, I just kind of like the free shipping portion of it. Or
you
like,
you can even add it to the purchase price of the car for shit's sake.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
you have free maintenance. And people wouldn't even give a shit about the initial price, and they would see the value of the maintenance for free and go, hey, man, that's bitching. You know, they're going above and beyond. They're trying to do something different, and they're taking care of the people who love their cars.
I would even argue that all of those cars would increase in value because there's no hesitation on bringing it in for service ever.
Absolutely. Right?
It's all included. That's fun. You're sitting around waiting, going, oh, I got to take the Bugatti in for service. It's in June. And then you're like, oh, it's going to cost $30,000. No, I get to drive it to the dealer and I get to drop it off. And I got full schedule of maintenance. Now the
but
records
then you're
on that
get
car.
Everybody going in and getting their cars maintained properly. Then
yeah.
They're going to have to hire more staff. It's going to cost them more money in the long run. You know, and so is it better for them or is it worse for them?
It's essentially prepaid. And if you think about it, the car companies that on warranty work, the manufacturers pay the dealers to do that warranty work for them. Somebody's got to get paid. Think of all of this money, this extra money. Let's say if you jacked up the price of a supercar, $200,000, $200,000 arguably can sit in an escrow account and earn interest over the life of that car.
True.
Right. And so when the manufacturer says, hey, dealer, it shouldn't make a difference to the dealer. Right. It shouldn't really make that much of a difference. Now, the maintenance stuff, the dealer makes a lot of money, but the warranty stuff, they get paid by the manufacturer. Yep. So it's just who's writing the check. Right. It's not fair for the, you know, doesn't make sense at all for the manufacturer to go, hey, it's all, everything's scheduled maintenance. You guys got to just do the work. That doesn't make it. That's not going to happen. The manufacturer is going to pay them. Right. So the dealer is just going to be like, hey man, bring your car in. They want you to bring your car in just like they would any other time. The difference is in you writing a check for an $18,000 oil change or the manufacturer writing the check. And the manufacturer, like I said, could be earning interest on it or investing that money into the next model or whatever. Elon Musk takes deposits on all of his cars so he can fund the next car, you know? So what's the difference between that and doing schedule? BMW, I believe, offers schedule maintenance packages. You can buy the car for, you know, whatever. You buy a car for $50,000, yeah. You get the schedule maintenance, you get one version that adds $4,000 and one version adds $7,000 to the price or whatever the case may be.
A good start.
You can make it optional, you know, hey, if you, you want it optional, I think you can make it optional. But I would argue, especially with these supercars where maintenance is key, it would absolutely help the value of the car, help retain the value of the car. Because
I don't disagree at all.
It, right? You're bringing it in. You're bringing it in to get work done. But
well, you're assured as a, as the next buyer that, that the maintenance has been done regularly.
Yeah.
Which is everything.
Anyway, that's my thought on that. And those are the two cars that I've been driving. In the world of electric cars, since we mentioned Jaguar as well, I will bring this up. Jaguar's next generation of the XJ. I love the big super sedan from XJ. We've owned a few over here. We've had a long relationship that we love with Jag. I'm still driving one now. I'm driving the XF. There's a lease on that.
Hold on a minute. You're driving two cars at once?
The XF is a permanent car in the fleet, if you will. I work with Adam. He went and leased the car for a few years. And then when he moved, he had trouble getting it in and out of his giant driveway because of the angle, and it kept scraping, and he kept feeling like he was hurting the car. So he switched to an Infiniti SUV. He's got the big QX80, big three row. Now he's got the kids in there and the dog and all that stuff, and it's fine. I was like, well, what are you going to do with that Jag? And I said, let me just get that out of your way. And so I've got the XF. I got to post pictures of the XF because I changed the wheels on it. I put the 1552 wheels, a blacked out 5-spoke wheel on it. Nice. One of the sort of like one of the Ken Block style wheels on the Jag, and it actually looks good, man. It looks badass. So I got to post some pictures of it before that lease expires. But over the many years of working with Jag, I like the XJ. I like, especially when we do like our Monterey road trip, Adam likes to just drive and hang out and get everybody together. You know, it's massaging seats and heated and cool, and the sound system's great and plenty of leg room. That's the big sedan. But where does a company like Jag go in the future? And they've said, hey, we want the XJ to be all electric. And I don't know that it's going to have any gas engine at all. But to your point earlier, they do have a legacy here. They have a design theme. They have history, from XKSS to, you know, XKE. So Jag is saying, we don't want to change the car. So as much as there's going to be a drastic change in going to electric power, design-wise, they don't want to change that much. It's going to have a hood in the front. It's going to be a long nose sedan. You know, it's going to be a beautiful four-door. The interior is going to be very much Jag. Even the I-Pace, their all-electric little SUV that they have, has a lot of design elements in it. And they're saying it's not even going to go that far. Like, that's still a unique vehicle for them. That was meant to be electric from the ground up. This is going to be an evolution of a new platform, but evolution of the XJ design theme. I think the one thing they said that they're going to do is instead of a conventional trunk, it will have more of a hatchback type of trunk, kind of like the Model S, and just for much more accessibility. And the idea of taking the big four door and being able to fold down some seats and open a hatch and turning it into a much more functional, sort of a almost the amount of space of an SUV at this point, but doing it in a sedan. So the performance and the handling and everything else. But they said, don't expect a race car. The XJ was never meant to be a racing car, right? So it'll be quick, it'll move, and it'll be electric, and it'll be gorgeous the way you expect from Jag. Anyway, just kind of an interesting idea. I'm a fan of it. I like it. I think if you want to race around in something, there are other cars that do that with, even several other Jags to do it in. And to be able to have this thing cruise and just be as quiet as it has been and as comfortable, and then plug it in at night, I'm down for that. And it is a car you could fit in. Right?
It's a Jaguar.
Yeah.
Other than the XKE that I had that I never could even close the door, but arguably the most beautiful car in the world.
I would agree. I would think it's definitely up there. Again, with the Aston Martins. Now we didn't get into too much Dodge stuff because we don't have to every week. Although I do have some Dodge news. But before we do that, reminder, your friends at Dodge, give your local Dodge dealer a call. See what they got for you. They'll bring you performance, technology, and great deals. There's never been a better time now because Dodge is still offering their great Power Dollars incentive. With Power Dollars, you'll get $10 off for each horsepower of your new car. So that every 2019 Dodge Charger, every 2019 Challenger, it's all part of the deal. That means you can pull away in a 2019 Dodge Charger RT Scat Pack and get 485 horsepower and get an almost $5,000 cash allowance. So if you get more power, you get more off. It's that simple. So hurry over and give your local Dodge dealer a call and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. Speaking of Dodge, I'll just wrap this up. This isn't a plug for them. It just happened to be in the news. The Dodge Durango is due for a new platform, and similar to Jag, they will have to do something a little more fuel efficient. So there will be a hybrid version of the Dodge Durango. It'll probably be mated with a V6. It'll have a V6 gas engine. It'll have some electric motors, a hybrid version. I think that's what they're doing with the Ram 1500 as well. So expect a 3.6 liter V6. And a hybrid version. They'll have their V8 version, their Hemi powered V8, the 5.7 liter V8. They will do their SRT version, I believe. No reason to not have the 6.4 liter V8 in that. That's the 707 horsepower version. But what's interesting is I believe we're going to see a Hellcat version as well. Now, they never really wanted to do the Hellcat version because two reasons. One, they didn't want to take away from the Trackhawk having the 797 horse and these guys having the 797 horse. And then also, what does it do to the price of a Durango when they wanted separation between the Trackhawk and the Durango?
Now a competitor.
Which is especially interesting because the Jeep is going to get a three-row version at some point, right? So the next platform, so now the Durango is going to be a three-row, and the Jeep will be a three-row, and they'll both have the big Hellcat engine, the big 797 horsepower. Now what are we talking about? Just a trim model difference, a little bit of brand loyalty difference at this point? I don't know. I drove the Trackhawk. And that thing is ridiculously fun. Every time you mash the gas on that thing with the all-wheel drive, you just start screaming, this thing is doing things that SUV shouldn't be doing. So to that credit, now look, the Lamborghini Urus does the same thing. That thing's batshit crazy fast and sounds awesome.
Four times the amount of money.
Yeah, for a lot of money. So I'm a fan of the Trackhawk. I'd like to see what they do with the Durango. I was a little iffy on the design. It gets a little bubbly in the back. I get that's more of the utility of it than the than anything else. But it'd be interesting to see how this ends up with its facelift design and what it gets. But look, people are going to go and have fun with it. And somebody was asking me, why would you get the Trackhawk versus whatever SUV, like a Stelvio Quattrofoglio or something like that? And I say, all these super fast, super over-the-top, crazy SUVs, the Trackhawk is the one you want to get when you want to modify it as well. Because you can make 1,000 horsepower with that thing.
Easy.
And it handles it pretty good. The driveline in that it's built to handle crazy power. And for that reason,
and that reason alone,
I'm a fan of it for that, really, yeah. For that, because there's no way I would be getting a track copy like that. I feel like there's a pulley swap and some exhaust going on. Definitely it's going on. Definitely, because those two cars sitting behind you right now, super fun. But until you get an all-wheel drive version of one of those things, Trackhawk is the only option out there if you want those things to hook up. But all right, anyway, we got to wrap this up. I've got another podcast, and Adam's going to tune in just a second. But thanks, buddy. So next week, I think we're going to have Alistair Weaver back on with us. He's going to jump in, and we'll chat with him as well. So we always love when Alistair comes on. But anything else we're missing?
No, man, just doing Hoonigans here in about an hour, so check me out on there, man. Should be fun.
Nice, it's going to be up on their channel, up on their YouTube channel. And
Yes, sir, you got it, man.
Right,
I think Mario's going to jump on afterwards. We're going to talk a little bit about the twin turbo that should be done in 57 days. We'll see.
Oh, that seems very precise.
All right.
All right, so what we'll do is we'll follow your social media to find out about when the Hoonigan stuff posts. Follow Goldberg... 95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram and follow that. You can follow me at Motorator as well, and I'll post some photos of the Aston Martin. But all right, guys, thank you so much, and until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel
and all four tires on the pavement.
Yeah, right.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. We've got a fun show for you next week as well. And before we wrap it up, a reminder about Geico. Whether you own your home or rent your home, it can be a lot of work. But bundling your policies with Geico is easy. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing because you have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.